And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. It is Friday the 8th of March 2024. It's just turned 5 minutes past nine and we have our Friday panel, which is all very exciting. Of course, this is International Women's Day. There's always female representation on the panel, of course. But today it's perhaps more than on other days because we have four great guests, two in studio, two joining us remotely. And I'll say good morning first, if that is okay, to Fionnuala Rabbitt. Good morning, Fionnuala. How are you getting on? CEO of Highland Radio, first time in this part of this programme, so it's wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm surprisingly nervous about this, considering...
I love that.
I normally do the entertainment. That's much easier than this.
Well, I can just
sit around and chat about telly.
Doreen Sheridan Kennedy is a former deputy school principal and a community campaigner. Good morning, Doreen. Great to have you back in studio. Great to see you.
Thank you very much, Greg. And it's great to get the invitation to be up here. It's lovely to be part of this community and admire the great work you do in relation to promoting women, actually, on Highland Radio. Lovely, you have lovely new people involved there. You have Trudy and you have Sinead and you have Jean Curran. And I've seen a big change in what you're doing in relation to women being promoted. So well done.
Well, you can look to your left when you're passing on those things and, rather than looking at me. But okay, that's fine. We also have Senator Pauline O'Reilly, Chair of the Green Party. Senator, wonderful to have you back on the show. How are you keeping?
Morning, yeah, really well.
Excellent.
It's a beautiful morning, nice and fresh.
Isn't it nice indeed? And last but certainly not least, Dr. Andrea Redmond, artist and community developer worker. Good morning to you, Andrea. How are you keeping this Friday?
I'm great, Greg. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely morning.
All right, no, great to have you on. Right, so today is International Women's Day and the tagline is "We won't stop until girls and women are equal everywhere." I'll start with you, Andrea. Can you foresee a time when such a day like today is not needed?
Never. I see International Women's Day in two respects. I see it, number one, to honour women in the community in the past who are, for example, there's a statue being unveiled of Winnie Carney and Marianne McCracken in Belfast. And we need to honour women and those who spearheaded the movement in women's rights, the women in our community. So on one hand, we do that on International Women's Day. And the second part is we take stock of where we are and our journey to receive our fight for women's rights and equality. So I don't think there'll be a day when it will be non-existent. I think this is something that's seriously important. And I have been involved myself in International Women's Day in exhibits and in protests and things like that for nigh on 30, 40 years.
What do you think, Doreen?
Well, I suppose I'm coming at this from the point of view of someone who's now retired as a woman, so therefore I can see things very differently. But like that, I've been involved in the past on the Equality Committee of the INGO, so I look at things with a very different view. But I think we have to look to the woman of the past as well. And, you know, when you're looking at people who have influenced you during your life, I think we have to look at the woman of the past and the great work they've done. I suppose I see a lot of women within my political background that I would have admired over the years. And also look at your own family and how the women in your family have influenced you. My mother, my granny, my sisters, you know, your siblings, your friends, because they all have a role to play. But we all, it's not just a day job. This has to be forever. We need to be pushing the boundaries and making sure that there's legislation in relation to keeps coming and that we keep moving it in the right direction, because women still have a lot of work to do themselves in relation to promoting what we would see as important issues for us. But not only for us, because the issues we push are for our younger generation of women, but also to benefit, hopefully, our families in the long run. It's not just about promoting ourselves.
But do you believe it's about the effort is to bring women up on par, you know, with how they're treated in life, society, options, equality, fairness?
Yes, today is
about that. Is that the battle?
Today is about that, but it's a continuous battle. You know, your first speaker is perfectly right. It will continue. It's not just about a day. there is we're continually looking for new legislation in relation to loads of things. Like recently, I know the INTO were fighting, looking for legislation and hopefully to move forward in relation to statutory leave, in relation to people losing children through miscarriage, and those sort of things have to be continually promoted. Whether as if you've mentioned different areas of women's health and different areas of work and getting promotion within jobs and being on boards and going to things like being in the European Parliament, being in the Dáil, being in the Aras, for example, you know. So we have to continually fight this. The fight will never stop.
And Senator O'Reilly, your views on that generally, but also too, just simply because you are a woman, your role in the public eye is, generally speaking, for the most part, more difficult than that of a man.
Yeah, I think I actually recently met Jacinta Ardern, and it was really, I suppose it was a bit of an eye-opener to see how women right across the world were all experiencing the same thing. So I don't think it's, you know, it's necessarily to do with Ireland, but I do think that if you don't see people in public life, it becomes hard to see yourself in public life. As chair of the Green Party, one of my roles is to try and get people to run for us to run for election. Now, we have 50-50% men and women, but what I do tend to find is that women have to be asked several times because they don't, you know, they just don't naturally see other women around them as councillors, as TDs, as senators. And so I think that we have to, it's not about the woman themselves. I think it's about us as a culture ensuring that people feel that there's a place for them.
Yeah,
but I also is that women do an awful lot of voluntary work. So we do all of that work, and yet ultimately, do we see ourselves in the boardroom? And I think we have to continue to have those kind of conversations. And like Andrea, I don't think that this is going to be resolved overnight. I don't really see a time very soon where we're going to say there's no need to have these conversations because everything is equally balanced. Unfortunately, we just need to keep on pushing on.
Yeah. And even too, like it was, you know, from the get-go on this programme, we wanted the contributors to this programme to reflect society as much as is possible, and particularly on items like this here where we're talking about issues of the day and what have you. And it can be difficult to get women to participate, even with the offer of training and what have you. So it's breaking down that barrier as well, too, from a sort of hearing the voices as well as seeing people in elected positions. Fionnuala Rabbit, you're of the view, are you too? Sounds like I'm putting words in your mouth. But this is a day that we will need for quite some time to come.
I think so. To be honest, for myself, I feel like that we have to take pauses, Dorian said, and reflect on how far we've come. You know, like in my lifetime, we've moved from the removal of the marriage bar. You've had, you know, so much progression. I'd like to think that my nieces, you know, that are particularly those that are under 10, don't think that there's anything that they cannot do or there's no job out there if they want to become, you know, a truck driver, a welder, a doctor, and, you know, astronaut, whatever, you know, from any spectrum of the world, that they think they can do that. But I also think we'll always have this day because there's so much that we need to do about promoting ourselves and getting better, you know, as Senator Roddy was saying, about realising that we should be stepping into these roles. You know, I find it fascinating sometimes when even historical things come up about women and we don't realise that happened. Like even just something small like the road safety have that ad at the moment about the first road death. Mm. Now, obviously a terrible tragedy, but what I find fascinating about it is that I'd never heard of that woman, and she wrote a book, a scientific document, in 1869, when we would assume that women would not have been, you know, receiving education, would not have been, you know, able to be involved in anything like that without maybe doing it under a pseudonym or something like that. And I find that fascinating. Every time I see that ad, I end up Googling and learning a little bit more about that Lady Mary Ward. You know, we see it in, you know, there's an awful lot of movies coming out now. Sorry now to reflect back on my normal gig, but there's a lot of movies that are coming out now about women that have done amazing historical things in other countries.
Yeah, but often it's because the reason the film becomes remarkable is because they did it, not a lot of people people knew it, they had to fight the system to sort of get into. That's kind of a theme of those films too, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I think, like, you know, I remember the GA had a thing there a few years ago, and I know they try and promote it all the time, but I always thought the great tagline was, you need to see it to be it. And that was, and I think that that is exactly why we'll always have Women's International Women's Day, even if we reached a point where we were happy with what everything else was. Women need to become better, and we need to be teaching our daughters and our grandchildren to, you know, to realize that they need to start promoting themselves.
But there's a huge
better.
Role for men in that as well, though, isn't there?
Well, I think the men need to be there. Well, to be honest, I find...
I'm on about as in part of the encouragement, education.
I think so.
And
well, I think that what we need is you need to have the support, obviously, of men. They need to be behind the idea. When it comes to legislation, obviously, you need to have them with, you know, to have the willingness to have an understanding of the needs of women, and that the needs of women may be different to the needs of men. Like, that's just a fact, you know. But I also think that for a lot of times, women need to become better cheerleaders for women. And we need to be searching out stories, you know, like I said, historical stories, looking at things like that. We also need to be promoting ourselves better. We need to think about how, you know, I was recently on a panel for a government body that was hiring somebody. There was men and women being interviewed. The difference in the way that the men spoke about themselves and their achievements in comparison
like
to
a confidence?
Women. It's because I mean, obviously, the women were equally as, you know, educated. They were equally as capable. They were, you know, but it was just even the words that they used to describe their achievements. I always say you often meet men in life who have, and not only, who have failed upwards, who, you know, have gone from better jobs to better jobs and better jobs. And you kind of go, I don't know how that guy got to that position. And yet it's occasionally you don't see the same thing.
This is why we invited her on, Doreen.
I'm terrible.
This is why we invited her on. It's the men falling up into
positions. It's not all men, but no, it's because they're more confident about themselves.
No, I get
it. They describe their CV better.
I agree with
you. They use better adjectives to describe themselves.
Can I come in on that? It's just something, too, that Pauline said earlier on, you know. You know, about getting women. I'd be involved with the Fine Gael Party, so therefore looking for people and promoting people to take part, whether it's at local level, at national level, whatever level you want them to participate, whether it's just an organising your actual political group. You know, we can't forget that women are still out there with care needs, and I think that's the main factor. Yep. Women are afraid to step forward.
I'll tell you, we're going to come back specifically about that, but I also want to recognise it and put this to you, Andrea, as well, because obviously we're going to talk in an Irish context, but I just want to note, just for examples here, in Afghanistan, 35 out of every 100 women reportedly are exposed to violence at the hands of an intimate partner. Honour killings are illegal there, but still widely prevalent. In Syria, 16.9% of women feel safe in their own countries. So that's 16.9% feel safe in their own communities, I beg your pardon. In Pakistan, there's an employment rate of just over 20% amongst women, largely discriminatory set of social norms and legal frameworks and high incidence of intimate partner violence, and also a country where honour killings are widely prevalent. Angela, so I'm not pulling those countries out to have a go at those countries, but, you know, there's different things happening in different countries, Andrea, as well.
We can't forget also that there's huge gender-based violence in Ireland.
Yeah,
and,
of course,
you know, listening to the contributors, they're absolutely right. We do have a lot of work to do, and our mothers and grandmothers have done a lot of work to get us where we are. But also there's an onus on men, and there's responsibility and an onus on government to deal with things like gender-based violence, support to organizations like Women's Aid. I mean, since in 2022, for example, Women's Aid had 31,000 calls for support. You know, there are women killed, 225 women have been killed in Ireland since 1996. You know, we look at the things, the barriers for us, for barriers for women to get involved in politics, the barriers for myself as an artist, for women to get more involved. I've been involved in the community sector for, as I said, nearly 40 years, and it's predominantly women. And the work that women have done and the issues that they have tackled, but then there's a glass ceiling, and the glass ceiling is to do with things, practical things like childcare, about women getting involved in government or major corporations is you know, it's they're not family friendly.
Okay.
You know, so there's so much that has to be done, not just by women, but in conjunction with men. And there's,
okay, there's, I want to come back to that.
This benefits the family. This benefits everyone, men as well as women.
I want to go around the panel on that issue as well, because I've been talking for as long as I've been in journalism, which is a couple of decades now at this point, about the barriers for women entering local politics and what have you. So I want to sort of maybe have a particular focus on that before we move on to some other issues of the day as well. But first, we have to take a break, and we'll be back with Fionnuala, Doreen, Senator Pauline O'Reilly and Dr. Andrea Redmond after we take this quick break. So just getting onto the issue then of our participation in politics and what have you. And I'll go back to you first, if that's all right, Andrea, because I kind of felt like I was cutting across you, but I needed to get that break out of the way. And I thought I want to hear from all of you in relation to this, you know, publicly, but perhaps more so privately, you know, very powerful women that have been involved in politics or business have said that they kind of felt that they had to make a choice. A choice between, you know, family or being a carer or what have you, the way they want to, and public life, for an example. I mean, the life of a councillor, the meetings go on for absolutely ages. It's a lot of talk that doesn't need to be had, and that talk stops, funny enough, when the media leave. And I get that. It's not a criticism. Nighttime meetings, all that kind of stuff. You know, that's just in the council, for an example. That all does really have to change, especially, you know, it might be the catalyst for change actually might be that more men are carers now, and then maybe they'll start twigging that we need to do something about this.
When we look at the statistics, for example, Ireland falls behind countries like China and Iraq in women in participating in politics. I really welcome, you know, the Green Party that they have a 50-50, and my hope is that with the council elections, we'll see a new crop of women coming to run for the local parties. We lost a fantastic councillor and Noreen McGarvey that we miss quite a bit in Doherty. But, I mean, the big issues, the barriers for women are childcare, but also things like poverty. You know, most women, a lot of single parents and that, are struggling just to put food on the table, a roof over their head. You know, so we have to, you know, tackle issues like that. Another thing that I found recently is how, you know, anytime a woman puts her head above the parapet, the amount of trolling online and social media, and we've had Labour councillors in England murdered, you know, and so that has to be tackled as well, the amount of backlash that some women, political women, feel, and that, you know, bullying and intimidation, things like that have to be tackled as well as a barrier.
Senator O'Reilly?
Yeah, well, I was a councillor before becoming a senator, and now obviously I'm running for Europe as well in this region, in Midlands Northwest, but certainly in Galway and Donegal is the exact same. You can be travelling hours to meetings, and so it does take up a huge amount of your life. I think you have to really believe in something very, very strongly to go into politics, believe in the importance of democracy. But apart from that, it is everything else. I'm very lucky in that I do have a very supportive partner. So when I'm up in Dublin, he's caring for the children. But, you know, what about lone parents, for instance? What, you know, the barriers that there are there for lone parents is significant. And Grace O'Sullivan, who's one of our MEPs in Ireland South, she's a lone parent, but she also has you know, a child who is disabled, who is an adult child now at this stage. The additional then responsibilities for caring then fall on the rest of the family. So, but if we don't have women in politics, then we can't change these things. Men should absolutely be changing it, but my experience is that they don't. That is my experience. In the Shannon, we have 40% women. In the Dáil, it's 23% women. And in the Shannon, we have done a huge amount of work in relation to women's healthcare. I brought forward a motion in relation to free contraception, for instance, and in 2023, over 200,000 women accessed that. I'm working on free HRT at the moment. And myself and the leader of the Fine Gael party in the Shannon, Regina Doherty, and the Fianna Fáil party in the Shannon, Lisa Chambers, we all worked on a bill around sexual assault cases, where at the moment, or certainly up until recently, until this bill is passed, you could go to court, be convicted of sexual assault or rape. Let's be honest, it's usually rape or sexual assault against women, and yet still be able to present references from people in your community without having those cross-examined or without having to verify that they're truthful or honest. And that has been a huge problem for people stepping forward when it comes to having been sexually assaulted or raped. So we have managed to get that over the line. But it's by working together, I think, as women, that we have achieved a lot of these things, putting aside the fact that we're from different political parties. But I think it's a good thing that we see that that's happening in the Shannon. But I think it really does highlight the fact that when you have women there, the things that are particular to women get highlighted more. And that's why it's important. It's not to say that we don't hold men to account to do it. But of course, the lived experiences that you have come into play when you're in politics.
And of course, that's not just in from the area of women. It's the members of the travelling community.
Exactly.
It's members of the LGBT plus community. You know what I mean? It's you need people, don't you, advocating, you know, from a position of knowledge as well.
Absolutely. I'm from minority backgrounds as well. I think that's, you know, we really need to see a shift in Ireland now to be much more representative of who we are as a totality of our community.
We heard from the senator there, Doreen, talking about 40% representation in the Shannon. I think it's 23% in the Dáil. 8% in Donegal County Council, with the very sad passing of Noreen McGarvey. The decision by Rina Donaghy to retire, married to Raise Gallagher, another powerful politician, choosing to step away from politics. That leaves Niamh Kennedy down in Killybegs, really, at this stage, as the sole elected representative. And I suppose you are involved in the back end of Fine Gael as well. I'm not sure how many female candidates you are putting forward, but you know, it comes back to, and that's not a criticism of Fine Gael, it sort of comes back to the challenges, really, I suppose of getting people to come forward.
There are challenges within every political party, as the two other ladies have referred to. But I think maybe at European level and also at national level, our women participation is very, very good. I take, for example, there, that last lady was saying about we need a different type of people representing us, like Maria Walsh parachuted into Fine Gael, at the last election, and she has brought a whole mindset and a whole support for the LGBT group and for rights and for a very different Fine Gael than we had represented in the past. So she's bought that as far as we're concerned in the Midlands, Donegal, North East. But also, we look at Helen McEntee, who within her role as Minister for Justice, decided to push to take two maternity leaves. That was huge, regardless of who was taking it, whatever political party was taking it. And that's what needs to be done. Women need to make a stand, and that's what's wrong. Women are partly to blame for lack of women participating, and I'd be the first to say that, because we're nearly afraid to put ourselves forward.
Andrea, come in on that too, because this is a
conversation. I don't agree with that. I think the barriers have been there, and I don't think blaming women is it. I think their reluctance could be confidence. It could, but a lot of it is just their hands. I mean, family responsibilities. You know, the lack. You go into a lot of these political parties, and it suits. You know, it can be very off-putting. I've worked in community. The community sector is composed 90% of women. But then to get them to do that jump, the reluctance is just the male culture.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I have no problem with that. But I also do think that women themselves have to believe more in themselves and have to sell themselves better, because sometimes you really have to be good to be on a board. You really have to be good to be and get a job. You really have to put yourself out there.
Sorry to cut across, but do you not think it's the responsibility of these political parties? For example, how many women are going to be put forward for the council elections? So that's a simple question in council. We can see it's a very male-dominated platform at the moment. So here's a perfect opportunity for Fine Gael and some of the parties to promote women in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so last time out in local government, we did put forward four women, and we are actively involved. A lot of women have been spoken to in relation to participating, but at local level, just they're not available, and because of the care needs that you're referring to, because of childcare needs, because of maybe care needs in the home, they've decided not to go. But it's easier for men.
That brings us back to the start of the conversation again, too, as to what are the barriers, and it comes back to caring, Fionnuala. People feeling they have to make choices.
Well, I totally agree. And I have to say, I do agree with Doreen. I think that sometimes women need to have a, have a look at themselves and sort of say, okay, exactly what is it that we need to do this? One of the problems I find is, and you know, I've been involved in different politics over the years, is first of all, like the barriers to entry are, if you're a young woman and you're, you know, think either married or thinking about getting married or possibly thinking about having kids, you'd have a tendency not to put yourself forward because you realise that it's not conducive to that kind of a lifestyle. And then by the time women get to a point in their lives, if they have been mothers and carers, they've then you hear from them, oh God, I'm too old to do that now. So we're either too young or we're too old. And these are the barriers that we're nearly putting on ourselves. But also it's that we need to start looking at why, you know, more supports there for women to be able to go forward. And the other thing is, I'd like to think is, you know, we talk about want women to go running in elections and the political parties should put women in elections, but how many women are putting themselves forward and not getting on the ticket? I'm not sure if that's a very high number. And I think that's something that we need to be talking about.
Yeah, but it's
about
very difficult for a lot of the women that ran the last time were independents, and it can be very hard to sort of get over the line yourself. You also, when you talk about how they were selected, some of the candidates were selected in quite strange areas where they really didn't have a chance for that party. You don't want to get into the ins and outs of it.
Oh, no, I think that's what we need to look at is, you know, when we say, the political parties aren't promoting women, I think we need to take one step back and say, okay, is there an element of within political parties, women are putting themselves forward to the common, to whatever, you know, the process is, and then they're not managing to get onto the ticket? Is it that, you know what I mean? Is it that women aren't coming forward at all, or is it that they're not managing to get on the ticket? This is the kind of research that we need to be looking into to see alongside what would make people, you know, what assistance do we need?
See, I look everywhere and I see women in, look at the defective concrete block crisis, for an example, the powerful women that are leading that alongside with fellas as well. And that's just one example. These people, these community leaders are there. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder, Senator O'Reilly, you know, during COVID, all of a sudden, everyone was accommodated. We couldn't travel. So things were done via Zoom. And I know some meetings are still, there's still the option to enter remotely. But, you know, we have technology now. We've got hybrid working. We've got all these things. Surely there's more we can be doing to, you know, use technology. The point is if there is a will, there is a way. And the will does not seem still to be there.
I think that a lot of this is people still believing the politics is the way it was in the past. And it has changed. Now women can take maternity leave under this government. Women can take maternity leave when they're councillors. That never happened before. Now you can have hybrid meetings for council meetings. When I was a councillor, there were no hybrid meetings. You had to be there. That's been a massive shift for a lot of the women in my party. And as I say, we have a lot of women elected, particularly at council level. But the other thing I think is that what takes up a lot of time of councillors is what they really want to be doing, which is to be meeting with people, to be meeting with voluntary groups, with charities, with, you know, sports clubs. And a lot of those meetings I find happen online as well. So things have shifted a lot. And I do think it's about a mindset shift now. But I also think that there is, like, this isn't about women and women being at fault here. That's not what this is. This is about women have to be asked several times. We know this. Mm-hmm. This is statistically true. We know women have to be asked several times. It's the duty of political parties to ask those women several times and know that that's a barrier for them, that confidence is a barrier for them, even though they're leaders in their communities. And the other thing is around childcare. Again, and this is under the Green Party minister, we now have 50% reduction in childcare fees. So 25% already, and then 50% came in this year. So that's going to be huge. But obviously these things don't shift overnight, but we want to be with our children as well. You know, we want to ensure that we have that work-life balance. And I think that, you know, that it's bringing that into the conversation that, yes, this is how much women can do, this is how much men can do, but we shouldn't expect more from one than the other. But I very much think that it is the case that people put themselves forward for selection within their parties, particularly within the larger parties, and they don't get selected. And the reason that they don't get selected isn't probably, you know, a fault of the members. The reason that they don't get selected is because it's an historical issue that it's more men that are already elected. So we have male councillors sitting in those seats. If a woman puts themselves up against a sitting councillor,
very difficult.
They're not going to get selected. Well, it's not to do with their gender. It's just the pure fact that it's a man sitting in the seat.
Well, there's also a few men have stepped aside as well, and I anticipate more here in Donegal. It'll be interesting
to see. And that's where the shift, I think, can really be made. And that's what we really have to push for, I think, in this election, which is coming up in June.
All right, stay right where you are. OK, an all-party parliamentary committee is recommending that legislation be introduced to allow for assisted dying if a person has a terminal illness or has only a short time to live. A majority on the Rochdas Committee on Assisted Dying supported the proposal that the law be changed to allow someone to get assistance to end their life if they have between 6 and 12 months to live. The legislation would apply to people who have been diagnosed with an illness or a medical condition that is incurable, irreversible, progressive, and at an advanced stage that will cause death within 6 months. It's expected that the time limit with those with a neurodegenerative condition would be extended to 12 months. So, Fionnuala, a progressive move or, for you, a step in the wrong direction?
You pose this question and I have to say it's a very difficult one. For me, anyways, because I don't know what I think of it. You know, it's one of those things where I can totally understand why people push for it. You know, here are people who have terrible diseases. If anybody has visited somebody in a nursing home, you've seen some people who are, you know, elderly that are coming to the end of their lives that are suffering greatly. And you kind of think to yourself, is this the right way? Or is this the way you'd like to go yourself? And yet on the other side of it then, what is the right thing to do? You know, I know there's concerns about, you know, who makes the decision, how do things done. So I have to say, it's one of those areas in which I just don't know. I wouldn't like to be the one legislating on it because
I think the way I phrase the question, it sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
But it's then how that ends up being interpreted or where it goes from here, because we've heard concerns from groups, and it's a concern I would have too personally, to be honest with you, is that do we get to a point then where an older person feels like they're a burden, and you know, older people are already being treated horrendously in many areas in this country, in many areas of life. Like, do we find a situation where that all people are being coerced into making this type of a decision? That's where.
Well, I mean, I was looking at, like, in Canada, it was introduced in 2016, and the figures that I could find online was that there was 1,000 people that availed of the medically assisted death in Canada in 2016. In 2022, 13,000 people did. Now, does that mean that more people became aware of the possibility? It's such a minefield because, to be honest, in my heart of hearts, there's so many diseases that you hear about and you think, oh my God, if I actually got that, would that be, you know, would I be able to cope with it myself? Would I want my family to cope with it? And you can kind of think to yourself, oh yeah, that would be an option that I would like to have.
But I just can't, again, myself, if I got a degenerative disease, would I make this decision because I don't want to put my family through caring for me? Would that be a legitimate reason? We'll come back to you, Fionnuala. What do you think? I'll go to you next, Doreen, if that's okay.
Well, I actually was horrified when I kind of read up about this because I just think it's going to change the whole opinion and view of how we look after our people in the future. And because I'm at the age that I'm at, I am one of those people. So in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, please God, if I am lying in a bed because I can't make a decision for myself, my family are going to decide whether I just think it's an awful change in society to think that we can be calling the shots in relation to how we deal with disabled people, how we deal with care of elderly people.
Do you think checks and balances could be put in place to satisfy you?
No, I don't think so. I'm just horrified at the thought of this, and I just think it's very wrong. And I think it's going to change people's attitude to care of the elderly, care of the disabled, care of our young. And even looking back maybe on pregnancies and where children are known through examination that they are either have Downs or that there is some impediment that is there, you know, what does that mean? What to mean? Well, we'll just because we're getting rid of, you know, the euthanasia is in there. So therefore, why not get rid of these babies at an early stage? It's horrific and I just don't want anything to do with it.
I know a fella in Brussels that was involved in this
legislation.
Side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not legislation, no, in the administrative, a support nurse.
Okay.
Right? And he had a mate who, he had a mate that had MS.
Yeah.
Okay. Mid to late 30s. They were friends, and they and I saw the pictures. They went out for a drink beforehand, not an actual drink, but you know what I mean. And this guy was mobile, and you know what I mean. It wasn't at the advanced stage of it. And then they went back in the afternoon, and he took
his own life.
Well, he took the chemicals, which facilitated.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know. I mean, it was. I didn't know how to process it.
Life is precious.
I didn't know how to process it, but it's his life. Yeah. But it's his life.
No,
his
but
journey.
Life is precious, and whether it is or is not his life, the man above is the man who decides.
See, at this point, we can still say, for instance, we can still say, I'm not going down the chemotherapy route or the radiotherapy route. We do choose, do we not?
Yes, to receive or not receive medication, but that's different because we don't know whether the chemotherapy will kill us or whether or not, you know, not taking it will kill us. So, no, the whole thing of life being handed over to someone else that has the right to decide.
But do we not already at this point too, and I really want to choose my language carefully here, we kind of, in certain circumstances, can have a very good idea in certain settings as to when someone's going to die.
But that doesn't make it right that we take that.
Okay.
That doesn't make it right. Life is precious.
I don't disagree. Obviously, people should live their lives to the extent that they want. But on the other hand, then, you know, you talked about, you know, if you're at a point in your life and you're in, for a terrible example, but in a nursing home and you're, you know, completely bedbound and incapable, is that the life? I think the problem with it is that you're sitting here in the hole of your health. And I think that we need that in order for this to come in, there needs to be a lot of conversations with organizations and with people who this would genuinely impact. Okay. It's very difficult in the whole of your health to be able to say,
make decisions.
But some
make
people are having
to make decisions for others.
Mm. You know, Senator O'Reilly's a legislator. You know,
absolutely.
What's your view on this?
Yeah, look, I think what's interesting is that it's a Joint Directors Committee that was just looking at this issue, only this issue. Now, I heard the bells going off nonstop all day long on one particular day. And so the bells, when you're in Leinster House, the bells go off every time there's a vote. So, you know, there's divided opinion about it. But I think what's also interesting is that some people, I think everybody who went into that committee, pretty much, there was a couple maybe who knew exactly where they stood. I think a lot of people who went into that committee didn't know how they were going to come out of it and how they were going to feel. And yet they did go down the route of saying, actually, I do think that in certain circumstances, it's achievable with the right checks and balances. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is a moral question that actually people, society in general in Ireland deserves to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important that a lot of the things that we mentioned here, that's not what the Joint Directors Committee found. What they found is you would have to show categorically 100% that you were going to die within 6 months.
But with respect, we have seen in the past, and some would argue, legislation sold to us as being very restrictive, you know, checks and balances, many hoops that have to be jumped through. And then as it turns out, it's not like that at all. And I think maybe the public would be reluctant to buy. Go ahead. So, just you cut across me whenever you want, Pauline. No, Pauline, did you want to come back on that?
Sorry, yeah, I just wanted to say, I think let's remember that there's vulnerable people here on both sides. You know, that there's people here who have fought for years and years to get this right as well. So it's not just the people who, you know, are concerned about bringing this in. It's also the people who have fought for this with really heartbreaking stories. And it goes back to the Marie Fleming Supreme Court case in 2013. That's kind of where it came to the fore, and her husband, Tom Curran, fighting for the right for her to end her life with dignity. So, you know, there's also those people that are listening to this that I really feel
for. I get you, Pauline.
So I think there's moral questions on both sides.
For sure.
And I feel it's probably worth having a more general conversation about it.
Like, I get exactly what Pauline is saying, and I find my views being changed by the arguments and the people that have this lived experience and have campaigned. But again, this is something that we're legislating for, Andrea, that it's not the topic of conversation in every house. There aren't people all over the country saying, when will they ever bring in assisted dying here? I mean, we are going to very significantly change the legislation, you know, off the back of a relatively small number of high-profile cases. Is that
well? The recommendations are coming on the 20th, I think, of March, and the purpose of the legislation is to end suffering. So, I mean, the parameters are somebody who's terminally ill, I don't think it would be relates to somebody with dementia, somebody who has some complex mental to make the decision with their doctor. You're giving the individual bodily autonomy in making a decision. We had a family experience where an aunt had cancer in her spine, and no amount of pain relief medication could assist her, and her passing was quite horrible. So this is something that we need to look at what the Arachnus has come through. Mm. I mean, we've had research done by RTE recently where nearly 70% were in favour of assisted dying. So, I mean, we need to look at it. The discussion needs to be made. I don't think we relate this immediately to people who have dementia, who are not don't have their faculties to make a decision where the decision is made by the family. This is a decision that's made by somebody who's terminally ill, who has only a few months left, and we're trying to think about how to relieve unnecessary pain.
Yeah,
and,
but in relation to unnecessary pain, there are
Spain, Australia, New Zealand.
And then, of course, then what happens is the parameters are widened. Then, I mean, you talk about there are hundreds of thousands of people living with unmanageable chronic pain in this country as well. Are they going to be disadvantaged because they don't have a terminal illness diagnosis? Well, these are the conversations that might follow.
We have to look at what the Arachnus recommends and what's put into, you know, first before.
Fionnuala, did you want to come back in there?
Well, oh, no, I was only just going to repeat the statistic there that Dr. Edmund said. You know, like in 2021, there was a poll in this country. 74% said yes, 14% said no, and the balance were that they didn't know how they felt about it. I think the good thing about this committee, if nothing else, when the recommendations come, I think we'll actually have the conversation. Mm. We have a tendency... In my opinion, in Ireland, we consider ourselves to be very good with death and dying because of the way that we wake and, you know, the way we express it. But we do not like to have conversations about it.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that we need to start having conversations about these things. And like I said, you know, it's very difficult when I there's certain illnesses, and even here at the station, you talk to people.
Does the general population want the conversation? That's what I'm talking about. You talked about polls, and I'm not referencing anything to do with the referendums today because we can't. But there were polls very recently that suggested an outcome one way or other that may come to pass on the day itself, be a completely different result. You know, when we're talking about something, major, should we be leaning on a poll that was conducted amongst 200 or 300
people? I know,
we're
not leaning on the poll in order to create the legislation. The reason why I would mention the poll is to create... it's to create the conversation.
Okay.
Let's have a conversation and figure out... Like, obviously, you can... You know, sometimes you get a poll and it says, like, 100% are for it. And then you find out they asked 200 people. You know what I mean?
Do you think
we're 5 million.
Do you think the general population want this conversation?
I think the conversation isn't out there at all. And I'm hoping with a bit of luck that the paper won't be forwarded on the 20th. And I'm hoping that it'll fall before the general election, because I don't think there's been enough debate about it. And whilst they might be arguing about it and having their Arachnus committees, and I'm not criticising them, but the general public haven't had this conversation. We're not having this conversation around the tables. Look how difficult it was. Well, whether we should or not, it hasn't been out there. And you referred that yourself, Greg. It isn't happening out there. People don't know that they're talking about bringing in euthanasia. People don't know that they're talking about making this decision for people. And I know there's a whole lot of rules, and it's compassion and all the rest. So with a bit of luck, it'll not be ready to go to the public.
Because there's so much sense, Senator O'Reilly, you talked of the moral dilemma as people walked in to vote. This is really quite... I would personally want people to be very, very sure, long before they walked into that voting chamber, on something as significant of this, be it yes or nay, that they would be very, very clear quite some time before walking in to cast their vote. I hope I'm not misframing your commentary, but
I didn't clarify it as well as I could have. So what I mean is that at the start of the committee, so this committee has been ongoing for months and months, almost a year, and at the start of that, people really wanted to hear, I guess, from experts in order to be able to think, you know, how am I going to feel about this at the end? So absolutely, they knew how they felt by the end. But I think what's interesting is that if you listen to people who are experts in the area, that you can have some of your concerns allayed. And I think that's what happened. And that's why I think citizens' assemblies are really welcome, because that's all of us as ordinary citizens getting to hear all of the detail and all of the data. Mm-hmm. And then making up your mind. And I do think that that's what needs to happen. But let's be really clear. This isn't a piece of legislation. This isn't a bill. This is a report that is saying,
Yeah.
Well, if you were going, if the Oireachtas is going to make legislation, here are the things it should consider.
But it is the first step.
So it's a long, long way
from a
piece of legislation. It's certainly not.
Started the conversation.
It's not going to be a case of like, you know, tomorrow there's going to be a piece of legislation. Like, I just don't see that at all.
Pauline,
I think most politicians want the conversation to happen with the public.
Senator Pauline O'Reilly, it's always a pleasure. Chair of the Green Party, thank you so very much. I'm sure ahead of the EU elections, the European elections, we'll be speaking again into the future. In any case, thank you very much indeed. Andrea, it's always lovely to have you on the programme. Thank you so much for accepting the invite.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself, Andrea. God bless. Thank you. Fionnuala Rabbit, CEO of Highland Radio.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. I hope I did all right.
You did fantastic, as always.
Me too.
And Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, a little bit disappointed that me and you didn't fall out, but I suppose it's nice maybe if we're nice to each other sometimes. What do you
well,
think?
Is that because of the Davids? And it'd be nice to the woman in your life. Ring your mammy, ring your sisters, ring your siblings. Have That's a great it. Day, all the women of the country, because we deserve it.
And the weekend just, now, because Mother's Day is on.
Thank you for the reminder. Now, just a reminder too, by the way, I can't say anything at the moment, but as you would know, we have been platforming the conversation about the mental health services for children and young adults that are provided by the parochial pastoral centre. We're anticipating some good news in relation to that after 10 o'clock.
Great work to everybody.
So hopefully if we can get confirmation of that.
That's a great day.
It's a good day. So stay
tuned.
And
regardless of how what you're going to do, don't forget to go out and vote. That's the important thing. Go out and vote today.
Exactly.
Regardless of, it doesn't matter which way you're going to go in it, just go in.
Because actually those most motivated to vote will swing it one way or another in a low turnout. So have your say.
Yeah, have your say.
Thanks, Greg.